Almost time. It's so freaking Okay, so the time is yours now. Whatever questions or comments or anything that wasn't clear for you, please just raise your hand on your little reactions button and I will call on you as much as I can in the order that I see your hands go up. Yeah, Lenka.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you froze for a second, but yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, okay. So I have a medical procedure tomorrow, and I've been really working through over the past few weeks the health anxiety section. So I just wanted to do a shout out that it was very timely. And like part of it is just, by the way, thank you to group members on here who've been talking with me about it. I really, really appreciate it. Like, it's been a great way to connect with people that understand.
Good.
But there really is no answer. There's no like silver bullet. It's just being with it and understanding what your specific like construct is around this. And so I really felt like that one of the things that I recognized tonight with the window of tolerance is like I was kind of putting in the chat, like I was kind of being like this warrior about it, where it's like, well, the longer I can stand it. But when I was listening to you talk, I'm like, yeah, I have literally all these warning signs, and I'm like bearing it and like white knuckling through it, when I really think that, and the reason I do that is I don't want to like stop the conversation, right? Like I'm trying to, because the other person gets frustrated. So I guess all I'm saying, it's not really a question, but it's more of like the observation that I really do like it's my responsibility for both of us to take care of myself, because it really does go off the rails. And I think I just misunderstood that the growth isn't like, oh, I grin and bear it and stayed in that conversation and was triggered until, I eventually, I collapse at the end, or I have to do like nervous system regulation, like push against the wall. And it's like, that's not really winning. Winning is like, it's that observation and embodiment during, I think. So, yep, that's what I have for today, I think.
Yeah. So if I'm just being curious, because I bet, let's see, anybody else do what Linka is describing, where you're like in an uncomfortable situation and you just push through? Like, I just gotta push through it. I just have to handle it. Like, what purpose does that serve?
Oh. So in a weird way, it's actually kind of people pleasing, because like I was saying, the other person, it's my husband, gets like frustrated that like I'm constantly, well, maybe not constantly, but when these hard conversations happen, I exit and I end the conversation to like regulate. And like I do come back to it, but like so it's in a way it's people pleasing, because to meet my own needs would be to, okay, so he's a little disappointed, but like I didn't rupture myself.
Yeah, so great awareness that it's people
Yeah.
pleasing, and that it's not loving to yourself, right? So you do have a responsibility to communicate, like, hey, I'm starting to notice that I'm beginning to hit an edge here. I need X number of minutes to go take care of myself, and then I will return to this conversation. Like, you do have a responsibility to communicate that. And your husband is allowed to have whatever feelings he has about that. But that doesn't get to determine you taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't realizing how It just, yeah, it pushes me further and further into dysregulation. I don't know. When you put up the slide that was like how like the goal is to be like within that certain, I'm like, man, I'm constantly, just digging further out of that and trying clawing my way back. So it's like, that's not really healthy.
So that, like, on a micro level, just doing that in a conflict with your husband, like, I know it feels big to you, but it is kind of on a micro level. But on a more macro level, like, what do we do? Like, that's what we do through life, right? I'm uncomfortable and I need to take care of myself, but I'm just going to push through. I'm just going to push through this meeting. I'm just going to push through this whatever, right? Like, instead of actually the most loving thing I can do for myself right now is give myself a break from this, give myself some space from this, come back into my window of tolerance. Because you're right, the more you push through, like, the more dysregulated you're becoming, the more you're trying to, I don't know, you're trying to control how someone else feels, or you're trying to, you have a story that if I just keep pushing, then success is on the other side, or what I want is on the other side, or whatever. So, if you're doing this on a micro level, I can imagine it's probably also happening on a macro level, like in more of daily life, of just this. And this is so common with women too. So if you are, like, it's no judgment or shame. Like, the whole fucking reason I was burned out for 7 months is from pushing through. Like, lesson learned. I need more breaks than I realized. I need to stop and rest more often than I realized. That's not a personal failure.
Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure.
Anything else, Laika?
Yeah, I think my story around that is like shame. I think that's my answer to that, is like that I'm shamed that I have to stop and help myself come back into regulation. But, it's like a common thing and it's normal, right? Like just kind of maybe dismantling that shame around that for
Yeah.
me.
I mean, because you even said, like, if you feel shame about it, you collapse. You're collapsing. So,
Like I just go literally lay down on the floor. It's like, yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
Of course. Elizabeth in the chat said, I feel like I do that with my family of origin. And then when I leave and my daughter becomes dysregulated, she's 4. Then my body has been sending so many warnings with my family of origin, which I shoved down and bared it. And then I explode on her, and then I shut down in shame. Yep. Yes, ma'am, Betsy. These cues that our bodies give us, this is why it's so important to feel what we feel, because our feelings are the cues of, like, hey, it's becoming too much. Hey, we need a break. Hey, let's pause. Hey, I need some rest. Like, how do we know that? Because of what we feel, right? If we're not in touch with what we feel, if we're bypassing sensation, if we're dissociated into our heads and we're not embodied, we're going to miss all of those valuable messages. And then we suffer the consequences later. And potentially, people we love also suffer those consequences. So, yes, very good. Jen Heller, yeah.
Okay, so firstly, related to Lenka, like as far as like taking care of your own needs or whatever, one of the things that came to mind for me was like when it's you and you're maybe either the mom or the default parent, regardless of like financials, it feels like you're asking everybody else to disrupt the all of the responsibilities, all the obligations. And make an exception for you because you do all of the mom magic, I'll call it. And a lot of the mom magic is like, it just, you just do it, Like the diapers just get changed and the meals just get made and the noses just get wiped. But when you ask somebody else to do it, you almost like, if you're not already in a place of really good partnership, you have to do the work of telling them how to be you. And that seems like out of line to just like, to me, that seems like it takes a lot to it takes a lot of self to say I'm important too.
Absolutely.
So on that, secondly, I think it was Christine last time on the group follow-up. She talked about like she knew at one point where she was like, bam, I know when things switched for me. And then she talked about her body not being her own and how it was always like sort of in the service of other people, whether it be nourishing babies, growing babies, working, for the purpose of other people. And I so resonated with that. So firstly, I wanted to thank her for sharing that, because I can also absolutely identify with like never really feeling like my body is my own. And I'm not really in a place where I even know what that feels like. So I'm not real embodied in that way. But moving into this space, kind of something I want you to puzzle out with me. So you said like the amygdala, when you're kind of faced with change, the amygdala kind of sets off all the warnings and goes into fight or flight.
If you perceive the change as a threat.
Yes, that's a threat. So it sends you into fight or flight. Okay. So, and then you said something else in the slide. So I'm going to have to go back at some point and find it. But it was before the amygdala stuff.
Okay,
But
I can find it real fast.
ultimately, like, I feel so resistant to changes that I know I need to make. Like
Sure.
logically, I absolutely know this is not how I want to be, even with my limited like self-awareness. And yet I don't do them. And if I'm in such a high state of amygdala function, which I really am, and the amygdala is, the firing circuit, and the other circuits are just over there kind of going, all right. I mean, is this breath work and is the CPR techniques, is that something to accompany like my own just like sitting with this and going, does it
Yes.
eat it? Because the one other thing that I was reading a book, and I want to say it's called Grounded, and it was talking about the polyvagal theory. And she was also saying, don't deny what your body's feeling. Like sit with, she was kind of saying the same thing you are, sit with it. And it's our responses are not inappropriate, which I also think is kind of we judge ourselves for I'm overreacting. But the question that she added, which I thought was very helpful, is she says, is it needed? Which I'm going to try and incorporate that in my own freak out.
Yeah, I love it.
because I can go, yeah, that's fired up and that's fine. My body's giving me the message I need, but is it really now, or am I being like completely, is it needed is also neutral and not judgmental,
Sure.
which follows along with like your curiosity track of, because I do judge myself, which is one of the questions I asked in the which Jen like jumped on and spoke really well for me, even though I'm at work at the time that I sent that. But I judge myself so harshly.
That's why you can't make the changes that you know you need to make.
What do I do about it?
Well, what purpose is the judgment serving for you?
I think it's just so ingrained that I don't know how to do like, obviously in my professional life, assessing is useful. Like I have to, but my operating system, the one I was taught, was so judgmental that I don't really know how to live life without that soundtrack.
Yeah, that's the filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do I clean the window, Lindsay?
So you said limited self-awareness. I don't actually think you have limited self-awareness, Jen. So cleaning the window looks like every time that judgment track is what's playing,
Yeah.
at some point you come into awareness. Oh, the judgment track is playing again.
Yeah.
Why am I judging? What am I judging?
Yeah.
What if I couldn't make the wrong decision? Because that's what that unintegrated judgment is, right? Is it keeps you stuck
Right.
in not doing anything because
Right.
there's a belief that what if I do the wrong thing?
You are 100% on the nail.
Yeah. So the truth is that there is no wrong thing. It's not wrong if you choose to continue doing what you're doing. It's not wrong if you continue, if you choose to not do what you're doing and to do something else. But you have to honor the judgment first by being present and aware with it whenever it's happening before you can bump up against it and curiously challenge it. And you may just need a few, what my friend Kat calls disconfirming experiences of becoming aware of the judgment. Noticing that it could just be bullshit. Like you may get to a place where you're like, oh, I'm in judgment and there's totally no reason for me to be. Like it's bullshit. Like you may get to that place and then give yourself the opportunity to do the thing, make the change, make the choice, like do the thing. And you may even get the reward of like, oh my God, I'm so glad I did that. Right? Instead of resisting it all the time.
Yeah, which is what
Which
I
is
do.
keeping you stuck in the oh, I should be doing this. Why don't I ever do what I think I should do? Why don't I do what I want to do? I never make these changes. You're just like you're perpetuating your own stuckness. So the way out is to be present with the judgment and really, what is the truth here? What is the truth here? What am I judging? What am I shooting on myself for, if that's what it is? Like, what is the truth here? And you may find that there is no truth in the judgment, that the judgment is just serving because maybe there's a little kid on your bus who's afraid of
He's so
change. Yeah,
freaking
maybe you have a kid on your bus who's just really
judgy.
afraid of change and has a lot of stories that change means bad or change means loss or change means whatever. So just interrupting it with awareness is really your first step. And then the next step after that is choosing something. And if you choose not to make the change, then at least you're making a conscious choice and not the default choice, which is made with judgment.
Can you say that one more time, what you just said?
Even
Or
if
I'll
you
rewind
choose.
it later.
Even if you choose not to make the change, like you said, there's all these changes that I know I need to make. Okay, even if you choose not to make that change, at least you're doing it from a conscious place rather than the track that's playing, rather than the program that's running.
Okay. So yeah, so it's not the record.
Right. It's like if we were having this conversation, like pretend you're an alcoholic and we're having this conversation about alcohol, and you're like, I know I need to stop drinking. I know I need to stop drinking, but I don't stop drinking. I don't stop, even though I know I should. Okay, so there's the should, there's the judgment, but there's a higher self component to that. That's like, I know that this would be better for my life, and I know it would be better for me and for my health and for my relationships. But the judgment is there going, well, I should, but I don't, so therefore I am bad. So now we feel shame about that. Well, no real or lasting change comes from a place of shame.
Yeah.
So what does the alcoholic do? They feel shame, then they go drink again because it helps them not feel shame.
Sure,
Then they
they
feel
get
guilty about it for drinking and they judge themselves and then they go right back into the shame spiral, right? So but if they were to be conscious, if they were to be present and aware of, okay, I have the urge to drink. Feeling something uncomfortable, I want to drink. Okay.
enough.
What if I consciously choose to take the drink? At least I'm making that decision consciously and it's not the program that's running.
Because,
But
yeah.
you have the chance to interrupt that and actually make a different choice, but only from that place of awareness.
So I know there's a physiological component to like addiction to alcohol and other substances. Like the body is literally craving it and will kind of create the situation consciously, unconsciously. Is that the same thing we're doing in our head without the substance?
Yes, or our stress hormones are doing it because we're addicted to
That
our
is
stress
so fucked up.
hormones.
That is so fucked up.
Yeah, we're all addicts
Okay, and
in
I am
some
judging
way.
it. I am judging it when I say that, just for the record. Like,
Okay.
I'm consciously judging it though.
Yeah, we're all addicted to something in some way. Like if you can't make change that you know you need to make, you're addicted to suffering. If you can't make change that you know you need to make, maybe you're addicted to fear. Maybe you don't like, who am I if I'm not afraid of something all the time? Who am I if I'm not healing something all the time? Who am I if I'm not insert whatever the track is that's playing? Like, who, Jen, who are you if
I
you're
don't
not
really
judging
fucking
yourself
know.
all the time?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Because I mean, even in, connected to what Christine said, like last time, so much of like who I am is connected to like other people. Like I'm a mother to six a people. Like I made six babies. I also potty trained six people, so I really do feel like I am an expert in that place. But like that takes a lot to do that. And I'm still, and my youngest child, who is 14, is he's really struggling with a lot of things, like mental health issues and but we keep saying he's dysregulated, but like from this, he's not dysregulated, he's hyper aroused. And a
Sure.
lot of what you're saying is very relevant to what he and he can't quite he doesn't have the self-awareness to really know what's going on, or he doesn't want to face it because it's very scary.
Yeah, his brain also isn't going to be totally developed for another 13 years or
Correct,
so.
yes. And he's a
Yeah.
14-year-old boy, so
Which is the toughest age for boys, I think. My son also really started struggling when he was about 14.
and then he's been there. I mean, I saw it like as much as I could, and
Yeah.
I've been doing as much as I can, and it's still a lot.
Yeah.
And on top of like my own shit, I'm trying to still, like I said, push through so I can stay as regulated, and as calm as I can to pull tools out for him, when in my head I'm kind of screaming too.
Yeah, so I know that this is probably not the way that any of us were parented. So
No.
we don't know, right? Because we're trailblazing this in the parenting world right now, right? Like we are all the children of boomers, or no, sorry, our parents were the children of boomers and we're their children and they raised us the way that they raised us. And like, so we're trailblazing parenting, like
Yeah,
conscious
I was not
parenting.
parented the way I'm.
Absolutely not. Yeah, me neither.
He would have been beat bloody
Sure. Yeah,
if
same. Same. So, something that we have found really, really helpful and also meaningful with our kids is for us as parents to actually share what our struggles are too. I think that that takes it from being more of a like, I'm the parent talking down to the child, telling you what to do. And it levels the playing field a bit because then the child also sees like, oh, hey, my mom, who I thought had it all together, actually struggles as well. I recently had a really intimate, beautiful conversation with my son, who's 20, and he's in this existential crisis, essentially, of depression and anxiety and video gaming addiction and not making any changes, even though he knows he needs to make changes, just really refusing to change anything.
I think you're familiar with that.
And I don't know if he said it differently or if I heard it differently. I don't really know what happened, but we had this really beautiful conversation where he was sharing with me how he felt again, and it just clicked, and I was like, oh my gosh, buddy, are you like protesting capitalism? And he was like, yes, mom, yes. And I was like, I don't know how I didn't see it until now. But he has this very like hopeless outlook about the world and this very like, I can't do anything to change it. I have no power. Everything is hopeless. I'm a victim. I am Gen Z. I'm never going to own a home. I'm never going to make enough money. I'm never going to be successful. Like he has this whole story. And so his nervous system has responded to this story by full on fucking collapse. So he's hypo aroused. And so I like as he was saying that, I said, you know, buddy, like I didn't have the stress of like capitalism and climate grief and all of the things that you're experiencing, but I did go through my own dark night of the soul, and my pain was more coming from inside myself and from things that were happening in my body that were scary and from unprocessed childhood trauma that I didn't know what to do with. And it sounds like your pain is coming from things that feel a lot bigger and scarier than you are, and that you feel really powerless against. But like pain is pain. And I felt really powerless and helpless about what I was experiencing too, to the point that I wanted to end my life. And me sharing that about myself opened him up, and where he said, so how did you come out of it? It's been 5 years since I attempted to kill myself, and it's the first time my child has ever been like, what happened and how did you change? So I was able to share with him, like, step by step, like, it was a series of choices. Like, I saw what wasn't working in my life, and I started to work to change what wasn't working. And I'm still working to change some things in my life. And I started processing trauma and I started regulating my nervous system and all of these things. And I'm like, you can do all of those things too. And you have me and your dad who are like amazing teachers for this. And we're your safety net. And like, I just really find with our kids that when we humanize ourselves instead of acting like we have it all figured out, and like we have the answers and they don't, and we are the wise elders that they come to for wisdom and advice, but instead we put ourselves on their level and we're like, you know what, I'm a human too, and here's some of the things I struggle with. And like, you know what I found to be really helpful are these like CPR videos. Here, download them to your phone, let me know how they work for you. If you want to do some together, let's do them together. Like, make it a together thing and not a I have to get myself regulated so I can help him thing. He's old enough that the two of you can do some of these things together, and it will probably build intimacy and safety in your relationship.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for
It
sharing
was
that.
awesome. I felt really good after that conversation. And I remember telling David afterwards, because we talked on the phone because my son's in Texas right now. I remember telling David afterwards, like, I feel like that's the first real conversation I've had with our son in a really long time because he's just so shut down.
Yeah,
But
and that
COVID
fact.
really did a number on my kid. Like,
What
COVID,
did?
like,
Oh.
COVID. The isolation and the we've had several conversations that because of my own dark night of the soul, where I can wholeheartedly admit that during that period of like beginning of 2018 through mid 2019, so for about 18 months, because of my own struggles, even though it wasn't my intention and I didn't want to and I didn't know that this is what I was doing, I emotionally abandoned my kids. Because I had to focus on myself or I was gonna die. And like, I wasn't able to be there for them emotionally the way that they needed me to be because of what I was going through emotionally. So it's not my fault, it's not their fault, but this is the trauma that my kids have, is like, I emotionally abandoned them for that time in their lives. I have totally admitted it. I have taken accountability for it. I've taken responsibility for it. I've told them whatever way we can help you heal this, like, we're absolutely there for whatever you need, we're there. But oh, I lost my train of thought. What was I to tell you from that? Oh, so yeah, that happened in 2018 to the middle of 2019, and then 6 months later, COVID started. And so from my emotional abandonment of my son, and then COVID happening on top of that, and his entire world getting shut down. he missed some developmental milestones, like socially, communication wise, emotionally. Like my 20-year-old son, I would say, is mentally like a 14 or 15-year-old. And I don't say that in any kind of like degrading way about him. Like he truly missed some developmental milestones. And so we're at the place where it's like, instead of shaming you for being a 20-year-old who's developmentally behind by no reason of his own choosing and for reasons that are not his fault, like we're supporting him in the best ways that we know how and having a lot of communication and conversation about all of this. And he knows that when he comes home, he's in Texas right now, if and when he decides to come home, we've already discussed the boundaries that are going to be in place for whenever he gets here. And it's going to be like, Ryan, even though you are technically an adult because you're 20, you're not going to have the same freedoms and all of that that a 20-year-old living at home with his parents would have. Like you're going to have a curfew and you're going to have, all of these different things because we need to work on meeting these developmental milestones. And so that's going to require us to kind of rewind the clock a bit and get caught up. And Dad and I are totally here to support you, but that's also going to come with boundaries that you probably don't like.
And to be like accepting of that.
He did say, yeah, I don't like it, but I understand. And he accepts it. But right now he's trying to stay in Texas, which is totally fine because he might meet those developmental milestones on his own, right? So this is his opportunity. Like the reason he went to Texas is because he was so low emotionally. And we were like, maybe you just need a change. Maybe you just need a change. Like, why don't you go live with my brother? Work down there. There's a lot more opportunities. Just have a change. We live in a really rural area. There's not a lot of opportunities in terms of jobs, especially for kids that are just out of high school. And so his excuse while he was here was, I can't do anything with my life because there's nothing here that I want to do. There's no opportunities. It's too small. There's not enough places to work, whatever. And we were like, okay, go to a place with more opportunities. If that's the problem, go to a place with more opportunities. So he went to Texas. He's in Amarillo, which is a town of like 350,000 people, tons of jobs everywhere. I mean, he could work in retail, restaurants, like food service, like whatever. He could do whatever. And he got there and he still has the same issues. And that was such an important lesson for him because I was like, so see, it wasn't the lack of opportunities here, but your mindset and your beliefs about the world and your sense of hopelessness followed you down there. And so now you're having the exact same pattern showing up in a totally different place, and it has nothing to do with the lack of opportunities. And he was like, you're right. You're really right.
That's a good mom moment right there.
We're doing a lot of, parenting from afar right now. It's really, really interesting.
I triage
Really
my children
interesting.
through text message, so yeah, my bigger ones for sure. I will try to get over to other people, but
My son and I have learned that we communicate better through text.
sometimes it's more succinct. Yeah, but I did have a my daughter is 22. And she and I had planned to do something this weekend, and I was feeling very, very overwhelmed and hesitant about it. And I did send her a text message, and I just said, "Hey, this is what's going on, and I am like, I don't know quite what to do. I don't know whether I want to go, but I don't want to disappoint you, and I just don't know what's the right thing to do." And she first kind of did a check-in, and then she let it go, and then she said later on, "I think we should go." And the thing that struck me was she said, it is a once in a lifetime opportunity, and it is. And she's like, "And I wouldn't want to go with anyone else."
That's important.
So, like, when you talk about your children like evolving into having those different conversations,
They do.
that was like, she's done it a few times too. She's definitely like coming into herself, and I would like to think some of my parenting like edge that into her, but
Yeah,
that was
of course
like
it's did.
that was like I was like, "Oh my God, did I?" I was like, "I must have done something right with you." So that was kind of cool. So we are gonna go. So
Good. I'm sure you did a lot more things right than you'll give yourself credit for.
yeah. But I will turn the time over to everybody else. Thanks so much, Lindsay.
Yeah, of course, Jen. Anytime. Christine.
Sorry, hi.
You're okay.
Hi,
Hi.
sorry. I have a question, but also I just wanna let both of you know that similar daughter, son, similar ages, my son is struggling with very many of the same things. And it's always cool to see when they come back around. You know, my daughter went through her, and so it's just hang in there, keep going. And as long as they know that you love them, I don't think you can really screw up too much, you know? So, I have a question about, collapse versus freeze. And if maybe you could explain the difference, and I'm having trouble seeing where shame is the root emotion of collapse. So would you give that a little rehash for me?
Would you like me to pull up the image of the ladder
Couldn't hurt,
to give
sure,
you a
if you don't mind.
visual aid?
Thanks.
Of
Sure.
course. Yes, I can pull that up. See if I find it. There it is. Okay. All right. So on our ladder, freeze is just below flight. So the energy of freeze is it's a secondary nervous system state, which means that two primary states, or two primary pathways, neural pathways are active at the same time. So the sympathetic state is a primary state, and the shutdown state is also called dorsal vagal, and that is a primary state. When these neural pathways and these neural pathways are firing at the same time, that's when you get the state of freeze. So this sympathetic activation is the gas. Dorsal vagal shutdown is the brakes. Freeze is the gas and the brakes at the same time. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
So collapse is part of shutdown.
Yes. Collapse and shutdown are the same thing.
Right.
Yes.
So what are the emotions behind freeze?
That's judgment. So freeze
Judgment.
is the state that we were just talking about with Jen Heller, where she said,
Right.
I know all these things that I should be doing, but I don't do them. So that's freeze, because she's staying locked in. There's all these things I should be doing, but I'm taking no action, therefore I stay stuck. Okay, so the mobilization of the sympathetic fight flight is present, but it's being overridden by the judgment, which then devolves into shame often. So the judgment is what's keeping Jen stuck. And so her nervous system is like, there's all this energy to make changes, but the brakes are on and I'm not making any changes. So it's that gas brakes state. Whereas shutdown or collapse is just dorsal vagal, and always there's always a spectrum of this. So like, dorsal vagal collapse can look like full on, like, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome, being bedridden, housebound, like chronic pain, unable to move. A lot of autoimmune illnesses are like this. So that can be like full on fucking shutdown. But it can also, like, we can hint at it in states like apathy or numbness, things like that. So it really is on a spectrum. None of these have like neat straight lines. They're all kind of on a spectrum, just like anger is on a spectrum, right? It starts out with irritability, that escalates to frustration, that escalates to, you know, and then you've got like rage and violence at the top end of the spectrum. Does that help?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm really struggling to differentiate between freeze and collapse. I still am. I'm not sure what everybody else, I'm referencing my own personal experience and what I have experienced, assuming it was collapse. I'm not so sure if it wasn't freeze and how I could have pulled myself out of it. I feel like if I could differentiate better, then I would give myself the tools to not, and again, not even necessarily to pull myself out of it, but to recognize what's happening and to feel less controlled by it. Make
Okay.
sense?
Have you watched the Thawing the Freeze Response workshop?
I don't think I have. I don't think I knew that that was a thing. So
I think that that one will
should probably
help
do
you a
that.
lot because the whole focus of that workshop is freeze to shut down, that
Right.
spectrum in there. And so that will probably give you more clarity. But it's a lot of people, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but just in case you are, or just in case others do, I'm going to say it. But a lot of people, when they learn like polyvagal theory and they learn to identify different states of the nervous system or whatever, they can start to get stuck in the story of like, oh my gosh, what if I can't identify what state I'm in? Then how do I shift it or what do I do about it? And it's almost like being able to label, this is the state I'm in, becomes another means of like distracting themselves from feeling what they're feeling because they start to intellectualize it. And so I don't like, I teach you these states because this is science and it helps you understand your nervous system. But if these things become a block because you intellectualize and need to figure it out and need to put a label on it, need to make it fit in a nice little box, like then that's probably not going to serve you. So the information is there, but if it becomes a sticky point for you, it's okay if you can't identify exactly what state you're in. You're still allowed to listen to your body and go off of your body's cues for what you need.
Got
That
it.
helpful?
Yeah, and I will go and watch the thing.
Yeah,
I can't remember the
that's
name
why
of it,
you
but
have it. That's why you have
yeah.
it.
Okay.
For sure.
Thank you. Yep,
Yeah.
thank
Anything
you.
else, Christine?
I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Glad you're here.
Happy.
Melanie.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm gonna put it as in like two different like s parts. The first one it's like something positive. Since starting the Feel Without Fear, especially with the awareness part at the beginning, I feel as if when I start overthinking, like especially like overthinking to the point of not being able to sleep because I just think and think and think and it never stops. The first time was kind of funny. I was just aware that I was overthinking, and I said, "Hey, you're overthinking. It's useless. Just you have to go to sleep." And all of a sudden, I don't know why, I just fell asleep. It was magic. It
Thanks.
was very surprising that time that I was just talking to myself, like, "Look, it's just whatever you're going to think about all the scenarios,
Yeah.
they're not real, and just go to sleep. It's going to be better for you." And it happened that I fell asleep. The second time that it happened, the workshop tonight really made sense from that day because I was wondering, I had a lot of questions about that day. So I had a lot of personal appointments. It was not a work-related day, but it was like personal appointments. So I was sick for like 2 weeks, and then I just postponed pretty much everything in one day. So hyper arousal, and I got overwhelmed. Then I had one more appointment to do, which was like a therapy, somatic type of appointment. And it already happened a few times. Like it happened two, three times that I've had that appointment, and I don't enjoy that appointment because I go into the energy of like the anger and the sadness. And I also had to deal with grief in the past couple of weeks as well. So I felt like these things are just too intense, and because of that day was just too much.
I just messaged her and said, like, you know what? I can't. Today is just like not possible.
Nice.
And I really put my limit there. Like, I have to stop this because I know I can't go forward with this because I think it's going to make me feel worse.
Yeah.
I haven't had a really good experience with her because I don't feel safe. So I have stopped my sessions with her because she's not respecting my boundaries. So that was that for at that moment. But continuing on, I still kept overthinking. I was still in that hyper arousal state until pretty much the time of saying, like, oh, my fiance was like, okay, let's go to bed. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna try. And I just couldn't. So then I did pretty much the same thing. I went to go to the living room, I sat down, and I started that whole awareness thing again and started thinking, okay, how was my day? Actually, really, for real, how was my day? Well, the first appointment, there was nothing like bad. My second appointment also was not bad. Yeah, I was in the juice. Yes, it was like very aroused, the arousal was very intense. Like, it was just overwhelming, but nothing bad happened. And then I was able to go to sleep, and so I it's just crazy how just that awareness part of it just helped so much. So I feel like already just that compared to, let's say, before March, just that is already a difference. I feel like there's already, I'm already one step forward just with that. So a positive thing.
Awareness is huge. It is like, it's so simple, it's almost stupid, but it's so huge and so necessary. And like, people really think that there's something out there behind a paywall that they need in order to be well. I need more tools. I need this program. I need this supplement. I need this whatever. And like, I'm not saying those things aren't valuable. Sure, they can be valuable, but none of it matters if you don't have any self-awareness. Like, so that's huge. Yay. I'm not surprised either. I'm also not
And I
surprised.
would assume I this will just take practice. Like, the fact that it just took really a whole day for me to like get into the awareness and actually go through with it. I would assume it's just with practice that some days are going to be better, some might take longer and stuff like that.
Yeah. And like, for me personally, if I had like a whole day full of appointments, like, that's a fuck no for me. That is a total, like, I know myself well enough. I know my nervous system well enough to know that, like, it would just be a no. I would just be overwhelmed. So I would have to, if I could, I would have to figure out a way to space it out over a period of, a couple of weeks, probably, instead of a whole day, if I could. If not, I could probably deal with it, but I would probably fucking collapse at the end of the day. Like, just total collapse. And that would be understandable in the context of that, because I am not a high energy person naturally. I don't like going and doing things. I don't like appointments. I'm not agoraphobic or anything. Like, I can leave my house. It doesn't scare me to leave my house, or I don't have anxiety about it. But if I have the choice to stay home or go out, I will always choose staying home. Something like that for me would have been really overwhelming. And I'm a freaking nervous system teacher, and like, there's absolutely no shame in that.
Yeah, I think it's really it went from I would assume some, I don't know if because they're personal appointments, I don't think it's necessarily guilt or shame. But with my clients, that's a little bit what I did. Oh, I had to reschedule them. I slammed pretty much everybody in the same week, and then I was really exhausted.
Oh yeah, I've done that.
And then I told myself, I'm like, yeah, you know what? You know these things. You know you had to put boundaries with your clients. Like, you should have just said, no, I cannot. This is my maximum, and just put them a little further away. This was a personal day. I kind of had a feeling, and I didn't listen to my gut. Oh, I shouldn't add that third appointment. But I still went on and scheduled it anyways. So I think I should listen to that inner voice more than to just go
Always.
over and be like, no, it doesn't matter. You have to do it.
Yep. Always. Even if it's inconvenient for someone else. Always. But I mean, how would you have even learned that lesson if you hadn't had the experience and moved through it with awareness to realize on the other side, actually, my gut feeling was right. Right? So even if there is no wrong, you didn't do anything wrong. You just learned another lesson about yourself because you had a deeper level of awareness.
Yeah. So that
Cute.
was, yeah, absolutely. I was really, I'm proud about this part because
Yeah.
it's a big step.
Me too.
My second part was more concerning. I wrote the word pain because this has been going on for a while. The fact of having an autoimmune disease, there goes to have like sometimes flare-ups, and sometimes I get a lot of with stress, accumulated stress, that I could have like let's say neck pain or back pain and stuff like that. Then at some point I've been so res like. I don't know if I could say resilient. Like I just went through and just persevered with it. And then at some point I just said, okay, I'm done. Like I feel pain. I'm just going to shut down. So I was in a shutdown for quite a long time. And now I feel like I'm getting out of it. I feel like I'm stuck in between. I move between like fight, flight, freeze. Like I keep going in between all of these. But then I end up in the freeze response. The shutdown, it probably still happens, but not as much. But the pain, whenever I feel pain, I just want to go back to, oh, I don't want to move. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to work. I don't want to work out. I don't. So I feel stuck in that because of the feeling of pain. And that voice in my head just keeps telling me, like, don't, no, don't do it. No, don't do it. Even though therapists, tarot reading, whichever like people give me advice on, let's say getting out of the freeze response or getting out of the depression, they say you have to move, you have to feel pleasure, you have to. So I'm like, yeah, I understand that. Like the part of my brain understands that I have to do these things, and that's where I'm stuck in the, oh, I should do this and I should do that, but then I don't. So that's where I feel like I'm stuck, but I just don't know how to really go upon regarding that because of the pain actually is something bad. And whenever there's something negative for me, I really have a hard time moving past it and be like, well, you know what? It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, first, I think you and Jen Heller need to connect because you're both, she's shaking her head. You're both experiencing this very similar pattern. So I think you might be great supports and mirrors for each other, first of all. So if y'all want to exchange Instagram handles or phone numbers or emails or whatever, I'll let you handle that on your own. So that's my first suggestion. And my second one is, like, I also went through this whenever I went through my burnout of like everything in me was like rest, stop, do nothing, stay in bed, have less clients, do less work, be on social media less. Like my body really was like, we need to offload things. We need to remove things from the plate. And so I did that and I did that and I did that and I did that and I wasn't feeling better. I'm like, okay, I'm resting, but the resting isn't working. Like, how much more can I rest? And for me personally, I learned the very hard lesson that when no movement isn't helping, some movement is necessary. So maybe you don't go to the gym and do a hardcore workout, but maybe you go for a walk in park, or maybe you play with your dog, or maybe you just do some gentle stretching or something like that, because, and this is the struggle. I have chronic pain as well. And so this is a struggle that a lot of people with chronic pain have, whether they have autoimmune illness or not, is when they are in pain, then they're like, I don't want to do anything because that will make the pain worse. I have certainly done that myself. And the whole time I was doing that, it was like, because I have this pain. Oh, I can't go to the gym. I can't lift this heavy thing. I can't bend over and do this thing. I can't because I didn't want to flare it up anymore. Well, now I'm in the very tricky position of, well, I rested it. I rested it for years. I rested it. I didn't pick up the things. I didn't go to the gym. I didn't do the bending. I didn't do the thing. I rested it. And now guess what? Like, I'm very out of shape. I've gained a lot of weight from the lack of movement. because I thought, oh, I'm resting and that's going to make it better. Well, the resting never made it better. But I had this voice inside the whole time that was like, move, move, move. And I wasn't listening to it because I was letting that, no, I need to stop. I need to do nothing, override that. And again, it's not that I did anything wrong or bad, but now I know that just stopping all movement just because there's pain present, for me personally, it isn't actually as productive as I wanted or needed it to be. And I'm still in the exact same amount of pain in the exact same place in my body. And I still don't know how to fix it or help it, but I know that doing nothing didn't help. So that's just data. Right? That's just information. You know your body better. So if you've done nothing and you don't move at all and it doesn't help, move even a little bit. Is that
Yeah.
helpful?
Yeah. It's really, that's pretty much what I've been doing, is like doing little things. Or the other thing that kind of helps me is scheduling things in advance. And then I know I can't cancel them. So then I'm like, okay, I have to go. And then afterwards, I definitely feel much better. After a yoga session or saying like a little dance class or whatever. And then I'm like, oh, it feels great. Certain workouts are maybe a little bit more that you get sore the next day, or sometimes that's what happened, is that sometimes I would go for something more hardcore, like pole dancing classes, and I was very happy about it. I really enjoyed it, but then I was sore for 5 days. So then after, I was trying to get some tips on seeing, is there anything that I could do to improve that? So instead, I just decided to pause the pole dancing and then just do smaller things for now until I feel more confident to go back to that. After.
Yeah. And I mean, just to be a pain in the ass, what's bad about being sore for 5 days? Like, you recovered.
Absolutely.
You were okay,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. I think it's just, it's the that negative talk or that negative thing that's happening in my head during those 5 days that is just like, oh, I can't do this, or I can't think like this for 5 days. I don't want to do this again. So then I try to avoid that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just use the magic word avoid.
Yeah.
I mean, you're allowed to make the sovereign decision of like, yeah, if I pole dance, I'm sore for 5 days afterwards. I don't want to have that experience. That's totally fine for you to make that decision. I'm not questioning your decision. I'm just saying if that decision is rooted in, I need to avoid that kind of pain or I need to avoid that level of soreness, I just want to point out that it wasn't bad. You didn't do the wrong thing by taking the pole class, and you were sore for 5 days, but you were okay. Like you were uncomfortable, but you were okay. That's okay. Sorry,
Yeah.
just to be the
I
devil's
think
advocate a little bit.
I think it's gonna have to be like a rewiring of how I talk to myself regarding pain and soreness and stuff like that.
Yep,
Definitely.
absolutely. It is a rewiring. You're absolutely right.
All right.
But you have enough awareness now, you can do that.
Yeah, it starts there.
That's right. It sure does. It starts with questioning all the stories and the I can't be sore for 5 days after a pole class, so I shouldn't take a pole class. Might be a story. Might not be. You're not going to make the wrong choice either way.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of stories there.
Yeah, there's no room for judgment. It's just follow what feels good. And maybe the pole class feels so good that the 5 days of soreness is worth it. Who knows? Only you can make that choice, and you're not going to make the wrong choice. I don't believe in wrong, right and wrong choices. They're just choices, and some of them are supportive of what we want, and some are not supportive of what we want.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for sharing, Melanie. Nicole, thanks for waiting so patiently, dear.
Of
Are you safe?
course. Hi, I'm here. Hold on, let me go into this other room real quick. Oh my gosh, this is a really cool conversation because I feel like every question that's been asked is kind of leading me to this, because I've been struggling with chronic fatigue for a while, and there are some actual reasons from like a physical standpoint. Like, I had a baby 2 years ago. I didn't have much support in the beginning process or in pregnancy, so I like got really depleted and I'm exhausted all the time and just don't want to do anything. And it's causing real issues in my partnership with the father of my daughter. And like, yeah, I just, and I'm, it's interesting because I connect to everything that's been shared over the last like three questions. Like I connect to the sons that are like protesting capitalism. I can, and I'm 31, but like, I feel like I have like a teen part maybe doing that. I don't know. But yeah, the thing is like, I've been really struggling with chronic fatigue. I've been doing all the things. I've been resting. I've been taking the supplements. I've been doing the diet. And I can hold it for maybe a month. And then I start to break down into my old ways of not eating enough and then like sugar binges, which like now I'm not judging myself for. I can just see the pattern and know like, this isn't very supportive to my body. But anywho, I'm doing all the things. I'm connecting to what you were sharing, Lindsay, around like it's not doing anything. And this chronic fatigue is really getting in the way of some things because I need to make change in my life financially. And I need to be able to provide more for my daughter. And I want to show myself that I can like be beyond my family story of like, you can't make good money and do what you love and do like, you know, what you're here to do. You have to kind of always sell out to something that you don't really like so much just to get paid for it. And I just, yeah, I feel myself really stuck in this hypo arousal state for a while. I was like, oh, it's obviously physical. Let me handle the physical stuff of it. I've done that for 3 months. It has not been significant change. I'm watching all my habits start to break down because I'm just like, there's literally no point in being like a health perfectionist. Like, I'm still fucking tired. So I'm like, just very curious. I imagine the thawing and the freeze response workshop would be a good place to start because it's like a version of that that I'm going through with hypoarousal. But I would just love to hear your thoughts on all that I shared. I know I just put down a lot.
I mean, my first thought always goes to like, isn't your body so smart to like downshift you after like having a baby? And just like, I don't want to share the rest of your story with your group, with the group, because that's private. But knowing what I know about you, Nicole, I think that a period of fatigue after what you've been through in the past, I don't know, what, 3 to 5 years? It seems pretty reasonable. It seems like pretty much like your body is like, I can't sustain this high level of stress, so I'm going to put the brakes on for you. And again, if it has like physiological roots, I mean, I have like something I wondered about is like, have you had your thyroid checked? Like that would be something to look at possibly. Is your
I
thyroid?
do have a little, so I do have a little information on it. And this was also part of the like health anxiety when we were talking about where I was like, I'm scared I have thyroid cancer. It's like most of me knows I'm okay. But then there's this tiny part that's like, what if something is catastrophically wrong? And like, this is the beginning of the
Yeah,
end.
so that's when it's really smart to just be like, okay, maybe I'll go get my thyroid checked, you know?
So
I
what
would.
I know is that I have increased thyroid antibodies and what my doctor was telling me is that because I've had such like long amount of time at like an aroused state and my cortisol levels are like consistently high, so I'm just like burning out really intensely after like, you know, there's no more cortisol to burn and then I'm like back on it again because my mind will ramp me up into this like hyper aroused state. I feel like what I'm dealing with is I'm going between hyper arousal of like extreme rage to extreme fatigue, hypoarousal, and I bounce back and forth anyhow. But anyway, basically what they were saying is that the impact of that is that that is now affecting my thyroid, that I don't have anything like Hashimoto's, but that I have increased antibodies. And then I spoke to my psychiatrist and was like, you probably should get your thyroid checked because in rare cases, that can mean that nodules are starting to form. And it's just good to know.
Okay, so my understanding of the thyroid is that elevated TPO antibodies is indicative of an autoimmune, like a Hashimoto's situation. And Jen Heller is a nurse and she's shaking her head yes. So that
So I
is
guess I may be edging into autoimmune. I can accept that because I'm exhausted and things just don't feel right.
I have another one-on-one client who's not in Feel Without Fear, and she's also been dealing with chronic fatigue since like last September, and went and got her thyroid checked recently, and she has now been diagnosed with Hashimoto's. So I think it's a very real thing if you are dealing with ongoing fatigue that supplements and diet and stress reduction and all, and like sleep, prioritizing your sleep and all that. Like, if those very basic foundational things are not improving your situation, I think that that does warrant some blood work, some, maybe a sonogram of your thyroid to check for nodules, or at least like a palpation to check for nodules. And if you have elevated TPO antibodies, I want to say that, like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Jen, is it like anything that's 9 and above, is that considered Hashimoto's, or is it lower than that? I can't remember off
I
the top.
don't know. I don't know the direct numbers, and then I also feel like the clinical and the subclinical always go together for me. And I will say, and I'm sending Nicole a message right now, but
Perfect.
there are a lot of non-farm choices you can make that will assist your thyroid and help it out. And adrenals and the cortisol, their thyroid and adrenals are really good friends.
Yep.
And one will hold up the other until they can't do it anymore. And that's probably what I hear and hope is
Yeah.
they're getting
That
tired.
makes sense.
Yeah, I was
What a
thinking.
perfect group to process this with. Y'all are
I
amazing.
know.
And like
I was thinking
we've like
exactly
gracefully like gotten into this conversation too. Like I love it. I can't wait to listen to it again and again. There's so many nuggets. So thanks, y'all.
I think, Nicole, for you, a thyroid slash adrenal, I mean, we have what's called the HPA axis, which is hypothalamus, pituitary gland, adrenals, and that's like a negative feedback loop. So if you have an overproduction of cortisol, that's signaling threat to the brain, right? Or threat is signaled by the brain, and that tells the adrenals to pump out more cortisol, and that'll create a negative feedback loop where you're like, you have to interrupt that feedback loop. And certainly you can do that through things that are non-pharmaceutical, like dietary intervention, supplemental intervention. I would say like traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture could probably be really helpful for something like that. Pro-metabolic eating, major stress reduction. I also know that like your job is a very high demand physical job. So, could it be at this time in your life that your very high demand physical job is working against you? Like, do you even have the physical resources to put that kind of output out at work? Like, I don't know. But your body's definitely gotten your attention, so she's successfully done that because she's super smart. And yeah, I would definitely follow the thyroid thread for a bit for sure. And you could also read up on HPA axis dysfunction. I'll put that in the chat in case you need that spelled out for you. But like, you could look into that. Personally, I see functional doctors. So I have like traditional conventional labs run, but then I work with functional doctors because, like with the thyroid, for example, the conventional range for TSH is pretty narrow. And with TSH, the higher your TSH, that could indicate hypothyroidism. The lower your TSH, that can indicate hyperthyroidism. But the range of normal conventionally is pretty small. And most medical doctors will look at your thyroid number, and if you're in that range, they'll be like, well, your blood work is fine, so your thyroid is fine, whenever you have all the symptoms of a thyroid issue. Whereas a functional doctor, the range is a lot wider, and they also will treat you based on symptoms and not just what blood work shows. Because those functional or those conventional ranges for lab work were almost all formulated on male blood work. So we all know that female bodies have different needs, different physiology. Our bodies handle stress differently. So I think that working with a functional doctor may actually get you further if you have access to that.
Yes, that's all great. So I got labs run by I wouldn't call them functional medicine doctors, but I basically work with this postpartum nurse team, and they will run like functional medicine type tests. So they have those expanded ranges. So I have all the paperwork, but I would like to go specifically to a functional doctor with that. So great. Yeah, I know where to start now. I was a little bit in freeze about doing it because I'm like, well, what if it's positive? Like, what if I just don't know and I'm okay with that? Or like, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, for my client who just told me today that she got her thyroid checked and she has elevated antibodies indicative of Hashimoto's disease, like she had a lot of judgment toward herself and a lot of shame about how shut down and how tired she's been. And like, there's
That's
no,
how I feel, yeah.
yeah. So for her, it was actually really validating and really relieving to find that out. Not that it was ever all in her head, but it was something that wasn't caused by just nervous system dysregulation alone. That something physiological is going on. And like, yes, everything physiological manifested as an energy before it was a physiology. Like, that's all true. But once it's manifested in the physical, we have to treat the physical. You know,
Right.
we can't just treat the emotional, or we can't just treat the spiritual. If it's manifesting physically, we treat the physical body. And we can focus on those other things too.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. This
Of
was really
course, Rose.
helpful.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. And I've also been, just taking it back to some of the Feel Without Fear work, like taking it to, and I'm also curious your thoughts around this one, where like, what am I protecting myself from? Keeping myself in a state of hypoarousal, of like not moving forward. Like, and what I notice it, how it's like playing out in my life is that like I have really big visions that feel very out of reach, even though like I know that they're within my capabilities, but just because I deal with such a level of like negative self-belief, I just don't feel like capable of doing it. So it's like I'm also noticing this hypo. It's like kind of similar to this whole like protesting capitalism thing, I feel like, because it's like I'm down with like, well, it's hard to say. I'm down with people having the ability to make money and that being free. Like, do I wish that there were kind of more like widespread supports? Yes. Like, I don't get why people have to choose. But anyway,
Yeah.
that aside, like I think that because I come from a family where there weren't like abundant financial resources, we were limited by what we could afford quite a bit. And I was like in a very like high class sport of being in like national level figure skating. So sometimes I feel like because I didn't hit that goal, because I always felt different, because I knew like now as an adult, I know that if like my family had more money, I would have like seen more success in that. Being pissed off at that, like that's part of my hypoarousal. It's just being
Sure.
like, fuck this life, fuck the way that money is being made. Like,
Yeah.
I just don't want to take responsibility because even if I did, like, I did take responsibility that one time and it really didn't work out. So, and I put my whole life into it and I got super heartbroken. So, I like, feel like there's another piece in there. Like, I have some parts work to do around those dynamics. So,
Yeah, sounds like there's a lot of anger and also maybe grief there.
yep,
Yeah,
agreed.
and that's okay. And grief has a really beautiful way of keeping us immobilized. The grief is almost like you don't have a choice but to feel this. Like you have to let yourself grieve. You have to let yourself be sad about this.
Makes sense.
And then of course, any judgment that you have about anger or rage or ways that it may be unintegrated in your body is also informing, like your outbursts of rage and then the total shame and shutdown that you feel later. So you're like in these extremes of emotion and what's lacking is the range in between. So I don't know if you realize that that's what you're saying, but you're saying like I go between hyperarousal and hypoarousal. What you're saying you're missing is like this range in between of actually being able to feel when you're a little bit dysregulated, bordering on hyper or hypoarousal, so that you have an opportunity to be aware in those moments of what you're feeling instead of it getting like totally out of control.
Yep, that's it. That's it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm far from the only person who deals with this.
You are far from the only person who deals with this. Yeah, not even close. You're special, but not
Love working with you, Lindsay. You're amazing.
Oh, right back at you, love. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you so much. I'm
You're
excited to listen to it again because I feel like there's just so many, so much good stuff. So thank you.
good. Good. Yeah, good. And watch Thawing the Freeze Response if you haven't.
Yes, I have watched it, and but it was a few years ago, so the refresh would be nice. Like I think I did the same thing with like Nervous System 101. I listened to it like when I first got introduced to your work a few years back, and then did it again, and it was just like so much more rich the second time. So I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for coming today.
Of course, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Jamie, thanks for your patience.
Of course. I wanted to cite in a call that I related to quite a few things. And then also, if you don't care, I saw that Jen dropped. Will you send me that list of ways to support your thyroid that are not pharma? Because I do have Hashimoto's. And I wanted to point out, Nicole, that physiologically, if you have it or get diagnosed with it, it could be affecting you in other ways physically that you don't realize are connected. Because I know when I got my diagnosis, my husband like Googled all the symptoms. And I mean, I had at least 75% of them and things that I would not have associated with thyroid. Like I freeze all the time, like I'm cold. I should have associated it with my thyroid, but I didn't. But then also period issues. So even if you don't want to pursue the diagnosis, I mean, you could just, if I don't want to trigger any health anxiety, if you don't have health anxiety, just to come into awareness of other symptoms that could be stemming from or associated with that. Yeah, so if you don't mind to send me the chat that Jen sent you, I would greatly appreciate that because I'm
Yeah, I
not,
can. Will you
yeah.
put your Instagram handle in the chat and I
Yes,
can
of
send it
course, I
on
will.
there? Okay,
Yeah,
awesome.
I'll do that before I drop. And then I had a kind of a question, Lindsay, but also wanted maybe your opinion, comments.
Sure.
So I have been practicing. I had surgery about a month ago, which is why you haven't seen me,
Okay, how
but
are you
I have
doing?
been, I'm doing a lot better. I had some
Good.
complications. Ended up in the hospital a little bit, a few days longer than anticipated, but feeling better now, a little over a month out of it, so good. Thanks for asking. So I have been practicing like awareness of sensations in my body, and I'm noticing this, it's the same sensation or like the same two sensations over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I come into awareness or attempt to, I visualize like making space around the sensation, holding it, supporting it since I can't physically touch it because it's inside of my heart. So by the shake of your head, I'm assuming that's pretty common for it to be very specific, same thing over again.
Yes.
I mean, my brain, I fixate just on everything. So I don't want to totally fixate on what it means, but again, I guess like your any thoughts you have, but then also like, could that ease with time? Or like, do you see it ease with time? Do you see it stick around? Just kind of opinions all together on that.
Yeah, I mean, I for years of my life, I had a tight throat where I was like swallowing constantly, drinking water a lot, like trying to swallow that lump in my throat. Had thyroid work done, like had, all kinds of stuff. Nothing came up. And for me, it was when I really started to use my voice and like really speak my truth and like set my boundaries and own my story and share without fear and without shame, like that knot really started to disappear. And I can honestly tell you that I don't get knots in my throat anymore. Like I no longer swallow and stuff my words anymore. And it didn't go away overnight, but when I consistently started using my voice more instead of swallowing what I was going to say or thinking that what I had to say was too much or that it was wrong or bad or I was afraid of how I would be perceived or whatever the story was, like I let those stories go and that knot melted away. Same with my anxiety sensation is a very consistent, hot kind of ball of nausea in the solar plexus, moves up into my chest, and there's like flutters around my heart, and then tightness in the throat. And there it all kind of moves. It's not like the nausea is consistent. It's not like the lump in the throat is consistent. It's not like the heart palpitations are consistent, but it's kind of, it like moves up and down, sometimes really quickly, sometimes really slowly. And that too, like the further I get, the more awareness I have, the less anxiety I have, the less that I experience that sensation. So it's really, really common. I mean, our patterns repeat, so it would make sense that our sensations repeat, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And our stories repeat, so it would make sense that our sensations also repeat.
Yeah, and it's centered around fear. Now that you said that, anytime that I have
Bingo.
typically like social anxiety or what other people's opinions like, or like fear of authority, like I'm going to get in trouble, something about me being wrong like triggers that feeling almost
There you go.
instantly. So,
There you go. That's great awareness.
okay.
So if you weren't walking around with the fear, then there would be no need for the heart to let you know that you're afraid, right? The heart sensation is just your body going, "Hey, I don't feel safe. I feel afraid. I feel afraid that I'm going to be perceived in the wrong way, or I feel afraid of being in social situations or whatever." Like, it's just your body telling you that she feels fucking afraid. And that's not bad, and that's not wrong. And you honor her whenever you listen to that. And maybe that means you make a change. Maybe it means you don't make a change. Maybe it means that you practice speaking up, more, or going in social situations more to kind of give yourself some exposure to that thing, and showing your body like, "Hey, this isn't quite as scary as the story that you have is." I mean, you get to choose what you do with that.
Which I didn't realize it was connected, but that leads right into what we talked about tonight. So my job is to determine what's within my window of tolerance and when I'm feeling capable and have the capacity to kind of push out of it a little to titrate. That makes sense. And I'm glad I asked because that made the connection for me. So yeah.
Yay. Awesome. Anything else?
Nope, that's all for me.
Okay. Well, Melanie is also saying that she has sensations in her heart as well, that she's been aware of since starting Feel Without Fear too. So, we're such mirrors for each other. This is why we do this as a group. There's no other way. Anyone else? Anything else to say or share or ask? We still have time. You are not taking up too much space.
Can I go?
Ah, I was waiting for that. Yes.
I
Was so
was
waiting for that.
Oh no. I was waiting for I was gonna do it on the group call, but I saw your Instagram post today on binge eating.
Mine?
Yeah, I think it was yours. Yeah.
Did I make a post about binge eating?
I don't think it was about binge eating. Let me see. I have to find it. Well, actually,
In
I
my
can find.
story where I was talking about like the sovereignty to like even continue to repeat the pattern.
Something
And then
like
I
that.
talked about acceptance and surrender and
No,
resistance.
I have to find it. There was something about not binge eating. It wasn't about binge eating, but I kind of took it like that.
Okay.
It may have been a mention of eating. But so I've had two instances in the last 2 weeks where, because I'm going to say devoted, not disciplined in like what I eat, right? Making my plan and following the plan. And following my plan is more of like that's building that self-trust with myself and keeping my word to myself. But I've noticed that when I get overwhelmed at work, or if I have periods where I'm sitting by myself, I'll go reach for food. And I've had two instances, one last week, one actually two this week, where I just ate like crazy. And so yesterday, I ate like a whole bunch of stuff really, really fast. And then I felt like crap, physically. And then today I'm still like dealing with the remnants of that. And I know exactly, like it's kind of like you have to be aware of when it happens. And I am aware, but by the time I'm aware of what I'm doing, I've already eaten. And
Yeah, so I guess what I'm struggling with is like, and I mean, well, I kind of know, like, okay, I need to eat. It's like, can I wait 5 minutes? Can I wait 10 minutes? Right? Do I really need this? What do I need? I ask myself, what do I really need? And it's like some form of relief, right? I've
Okay.
had a hard week with work. It was like everything is just like coming down. And of course, I just came off of a 3 month hiatus and I've been there less than a month and I'm just like, oh my God, I just want to say fuck it and leave.
Yeah.
Right. But what I do is I turn to food when I get home. It's like all of that. I just need that like fix. And I just don't want to, like, I've done a really good job at like maintaining my weight and everything and working so hard that I don't want it to go back. But I have these binges and I don't know, like, sitting with my feelings, it's like, so I eat when I'm bored and then I eat when I'm overwhelmed. And when I'm bored, I feel like I shouldn't, like, there's things that I need to be doing. And so I don't know. It's like I'm constantly going between like flight and fight all the time.
Okay.
It's like the flight is me, I don't know, eating. I'm just trying to think, is that
Your body,
flight?
babe.
Yeah.
Is that what that feels like to you?
Yeah, it feels like I'm just, because it's like, oh, you
Is it an
know.
escape?
Yes.
Okay, then yeah, I would say it's light.
Yeah, it is
But
an
it doesn't
escape.
matter what state it is. What matters is that you're aware of it and you know when you do it. And you're trying to seek escape and relief. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of like, have a post on Instagram.
Yeah, I know. My daughter took my phone. It's like I saw something today, and it's like, oh, like the choice. Like, I can't remember
Yeah, you
exactly.
have the sovereign choice to repeat that pattern. You absolutely do. Like, and that doesn't make you bad or wrong or a failure or, whatever. I'm not even like, I know people who
No.
would call that disordered eating or binge eating disorder or whatever. I'm not even going to label it that. Your nervous system has found a way to cope that works. Like, that's just a neutral statement. Like, it doesn't mean anything about you, it doesn't mean anything about food. It's
That's
just,
what it was. It wasn't binge eating. It was like, that's how I'm conditioned, like, to cope
yeah.
by putting food in my mouth. Because I know, I mean, I used to keep a bowl of Blow Pops on my desk at work, and I would just eat them when I just to have something to soothe me. And yeah, I take the I literally, like, we have a snack cabinet at work, and I even wrote, I put a note on there. It's like, what purpose does this serve? Did you wait 5 minutes before you grab something from this closet? And everybody's like, what? What is this?
Okay, so
But
interesting, really interesting that you're like, I have to wait 5 minutes before I grab this. So you're essentially making yourself push through, and then you get the reward of now I get the thing, now I get the snack.
no, I mean, that's like, I will wait 5 minutes, or I'll go do something else. But like, most of the time, it's like, that's at work. But when I come home, it's just like full out, like, rah, just let me eat all the things.
Okay. So here's my post. Can food be a tool to regulate the nervous system? I made this post after I posted a video of myself eating chips and queso. And I'd also smoked weed before going into this Mexican food restaurant because I was very hyper aroused. I was feeling really hyper vigilant and anxious. And that's what I had at the time. Like, we were in the car an hour and a half away from home. Like, I had weed and I had food. Like, okay. So I made a post about it, and then self-healers, their term, not mine, come into my space, and they were really shaming me about that. And they're saying that because I was using food and cannabis when I was dysregulated and then posting about it, that that was irresponsible of me as a trauma-informed practitioner, because then I was promoting binge eating disorder and substance abuse to regulate the nervous system. And they said that people would be less likely to do somatic work if they're always getting quick endorphin and dopamine hits from food. And so I like demonizing food is what perpetuates eating disorders. Okay. You're not saying I'm not interested in personal growth because I had snacks, right? Like that you're not using food as a way to bypass doing your work. Okay. So here's the big one. Even if your tools include substances such as alcohol or weed or food, pathologizing people's coping skills is not how we heal. I trust you to have self-awareness and to know yourself. Through the natural process of self-awareness and curiosity, you can absolutely come to a sovereign decision about whether you have an addiction or disordered eating or a problem or not. Even if you do come to the conclusion that you have an addiction, you deserve compassion, not shame. Even if you actually do think you're addicted to food or have a binge eating disorder, it's okay to acknowledge that you might need additional soothing tools in addition to, not instead of, food. You can trust yourself to listen to your body and what it needs in each moment. In some moments, you might actually need food, and that's not a disorder. So, like, if you're saying that you are not hungry, it's not time to eat a meal, you don't have the physical sensation of hunger, but you still go for food in order to feel better. Okay. Maybe you need some additional tools, not instead of food, but in addition to food. So, what else would give you that sense of escape and that sense of relief that you're seeking that's not food?
Going for walks.
Really? Would that really give you that sense?
It
Okay.
would.
Okay. So maybe on your cabinet at work where it says, like, whatever it was that you said, wait 5 minutes, have you felt your feelings, whatever. Like, maybe you need to put on that, go for a walk.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then you go for a walk and you come back. And what if you still want the food?
I'll eat
Okay.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I just noticed because it's a lot of emotions and stuff coming up this week. Like as soon as I'm going through the same stuff with my daughter, and as soon as she started texting me like, "Mom, can I have money?" I knew like, I'm like, "Oh God," it's like, and there I go, just being right, and it lasted like most of the day because it's like she wanted money, and I was telling her like, "Nope,"
So
and.
what when she wanted money, what did that bring up in you?
For me, it's just disappointment because of the way that she's managing herself right now. You know,
Okay.
it's I see her accounts. It's like you've been going to the vape shops and going to the liquor store and eating out all the time, and now you don't have money.
Yeah.
So, no.
Okay, so you're not dysregulated by the fact that she's asking for money. You're dysregulated because you're disappointed about how she's living her life and spending the money she has.
Yeah, that and it's like maybe it was a failure on my part.
There you go. There you go. So I see your behavior. I see your bank accounts. I'm disappointed in what you're doing, and therefore I make it mean something about myself as a parent. Food.
Yeah.
Eat, eat, eat. Okay. So, can you call up that disappointment right now? Okay. So, imagine you're looking at your daughter's accounts. You're seeing all this money that she's blowing on the vape shop and the liquor store and eating out. She texts you wanting money. You know you need to hold a boundary. You're so disappointed in how she's spending her money, and you're disappointed in yourself that this is the kid that you've raised. I failed. Like, what's the story in your head?
Like, did I not teach her? Did I not teach her to, I don't
Okay,
know.
what else?
It's like I remember being that girl. And it really has a lot to do with her boyfriend. She spends a lot of money on her boyfriend, going back and forth, commuting, and they feeding them because he doesn't have a job. And it's like I've been that girl, and she doesn't listen. She doesn't listen to me, and I know she's not going to listen because I didn't listen. And it's like she's going to have to learn the hard way. And that's part of me. It's like, man, I didn't have that. Like, I mean,
She's pretty much got that coach in the back of her pocket, like right here, telling her who's gone through that same situation. She doesn't see it that way. I
Yeah.
can't talk to her about anything because immediately she feels like as if I'm yelling at her or scolding her, and I'm not even raising my voice. I can talk to her firmly, and it's like she just starts crying, and then it's like she doesn't want to hear it. I'm
Okay.
upset with her for, spending 2 years in college, moving away and failing because, while her boyfriend is making all A's.
Okay. And what does that mean about you?
Nothing.
Are you sure you're not making it mean something about you?
Think I am.
What are you
I
making
just
it mean about you? That you failed? You didn't do the right things?
I didn't teach her right, or I thought I did better than that. Like, why is she making these decisions? Like, did I
Yeah.
not?
So what you're telling me is that you have this adult child who is making choices for her life that are counter to what you would want her to do with her life. And you are making that mean that you did something wrong. And then when you eat, that takes that feeling away.
No, it doesn't. It temporarily just gives me a sense of relief. It doesn't take it away because I'm
Right.
feel I felt like that yesterday, and I feel like that again today.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
it's yeah.
So it's kind of like what I was talking about on Instagram today is like I have a client right now who has really crazy health anxiety and she Googles compulsively. Like that's her addiction is Googling. And never once has it been productive. Never once has it given her the certainty that she wants. Never once has it soothed her anxiety at all. In fact, it actually is like pouring gas on the fire of health anxiety. And so she logically knows this. Like, I do this thing and it doesn't work and never has it worked and it's never going to work. But she is still a sovereign adult and she is allowed to continue doing things that don't work for her. Like, and I respect her for that. Like, I honor that she is allowed to do that. And I don't make it mean that I'm a bad coach. Right? So, your daughter is a sovereign adult. She's allowed to make the choices that don't work for her.
And then I did tell her too. It's like, how are you going to be able to make it out there on your own? And she's like, well, that's why I'm coming home. I can't make it on my own. And I
Yeah.
have so much anxiety about her coming home because when she's here, I fucking eat like crazy.
You're allowed to tell her she can't come home. You are. Just like I'm allowed to tell my son, if you move back home, the boundaries are going to be
Rules.
really strict. Like, you're not going to be treated like a 20-year-old grown man. You're going to be treated like a 14 or 15-year-old, not because I want you to feel shame, not because I want to have power over you or belittle you, but because it would be irresponsible and bad for our relationship if I let you back in the house. And allowed you to continue getting away with some of the things that you're getting away with because it makes it harder for me to live in my own house because your energy brings down the entire house. And he's like, I can see that. Like he totally owned it. He totally fucking owned it. But so it's not that he can't come back, but it's that if he does, these are the parameters in order for this to happen. And, but I'm also allowed to say, you're not allowed to come back home. You're not allowed to live here anymore. Like I am allowed to say that. We're not at that point yet, but we easily could be. We easily could be at that point. but I guess what I'm getting at, Jen, is if you repeat the same thing and it doesn't work, you're allowed to keep repeating that. You're also able to have awareness of it and to redirect that pattern. And so you know that eating your feelings doesn't work for you. You know it doesn't work. You're allowed to keep doing it and, keep trying to see
No,
if
you're
you get a
literally
different
gonna kill
result.
me. Literally gonna kill me. I'm diabetic. I wake up the next morning and my sugars are through the roof. I feel like crap,
So your practice then is going to be, can you catch that feeling before you start eating it away? And can you be present with it and listen to your body and what your body is trying to tell you. And I don't know what your body is trying to tell you, but I know whenever I feel anxiety in my body about even thinking about my son moving back in with us, that's a message from my body going, it wasn't working when he was living here before. So it's not going to work if the same thing happens and he comes back. We have to do it differently if he comes back. And so, like, eating my feelings or, you know, drinking or whatever to try to not feel that may give me some temporary relief. But number one, it's not honoring of my body, just like it's not honoring of yours. Number two, it's not honoring of what I need and what my boundaries are. And number three, believe it or not, it's not even honoring of my relationship with my son. And it's not honoring of your relationship with your daughter. Right? So I think, like, if food is a coping tool for you and it's one of the only ones you have access to, there's no shame in that. However, you yourself have sovereignly admitted, like, I am diabetic. I cannot do this. It's not supportive of my body. So, what would be supportive? Back up. Can you feel that discomfort even temporarily first? And then, if you hit your limit with the discomfort, if that's outside your window of tolerance, can you then find another tool besides food that gives you the relief you want, that is more supportive of your overall health?
Okay. Like using one of the nervous system tools
Sure.
in
Nervous
place.
system tool, walking. You know, if you're connected with somebody in the group and you're like, when I get like this, I need to reach out to somebody. Like, can you be there for me? I don't know if you're already connected with people in the group or if you want to connect with somebody in the group, like you're totally able to do that. If you don't have anybody, reach out to me. Like, if you're about to fucking binge and you know it's not going to be good for you, reach out to me. And if I'm able to pick up and talk with you, I will.
Right.
And yeah, it's just going to be a matter of like having a lot of grace with yourself, being really patient with yourself. This is a pattern that you've probably had for a really long time. You're not going to unlearn it overnight.
Yeah,
But
it's those thoughts and how I talk to myself. I'm not used to that. It's like I'm not used to that. It's like grace and compassion for myself. I don't know how to do that. Like I
what a
try.
beautiful opportunity to learn.
Yeah, I'm learning and I'm trying, but it's so like for me, it's so hard. It's just, and again, that's it is easy just to turn to what I already know and what's comfortable,
Yeah.
and but it doesn't do me any good.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. And there's no shame that you do it. Just like there's no shame in someone who drinks, there's no shame in someone who uses drugs, there's no shame in someone who's addicted to video games. There's no shame in it because our bodies are so freaking smart that they figure out ways to feel better, even though those ways of feeling better are often self-destructive.
yeah, I feel a lot better now that I've talked it out. And it's just like, yeah, I have to take it day by day because it's just like, okay, 1 to 2 binges a week, it's like everything's just gonna go back up. And I can't do that. I can't allow myself to do it. So I mean, I'm gonna try one of the tools. Yeah.
You may have to try multiple
The first
tools.
tool with the snack closet at work was like I just put a post-it on there and I was like, what purpose does this serve? Have you taken 5 minutes? What do you really need?
Yeah, so I think what, I mean, whatever emotion is underneath these beliefs, I don't know if it's grief, guilt, shame, maybe all of it, anger, like it may be a conglomeration of emotions. But when you receive these messages from your daughter and you are disappointed and you feel like a failure as a mom and you feel like you should have taught her better or why didn't she listen or whatever, like, first of all, my kid's going through the same thing. We're not sending him money though. Like, at all. that's on him. So there's that boundary that's in place. I don't feel guilty for not sending him money. Like,
Now she has a job. She has a job, and I'm not sending her any money, but it's like when she asks for it, if she needs it, normally it's like, okay, I'll send her something, but this time I didn't because I looked at her stuff and it's like,
Yeah, you're holding a boundary, and that's perfectly okay. You are allowed to have boundaries with your kids, especially your adult
oh,
kids.
she was pissed. I've
Of course
never
she
done that
was.
before.
Of course she
Yeah.
was. And it's okay that she's pissed. She's allowed to be angry that she's not getting what she wants, and you're allowed to have the boundary. But what you need to sit with is whatever feelings are underneath the like, I feel like a failure as a parent. Like there's probably guilt, shame, anger at your daughter, anger at yourself. Like who knows? Those are the feelings that need to be felt because those are the feelings that the food takes away temporarily.
Yeah.
Now, if those feelings are way outside your window of tolerance, that's why you have to have coping skills because you can't just be feeling things outside your window of tolerance all the time with no break. That's not kind to yourself. But the food is ultimately going to harm you in the long run. So it's okay to want to shut the feelings off, but you have to find a different way
Yeah.
that is supportive of your body, that's not going to hurt your body.
Yeah.
And then you can titrate the amount of time that you can feel those feelings. But don't be surprised if when you start feeling some of those feelings, if they come in like a flood, because you have successfully managed to avoid them for quite some time.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I've avoided it all along.
Yeah. So if you can't get there on your own, like, it's okay to ask for help. Like, I have openings in my coaching client calendar right now. If you want to work with me, I totally have openings. Like, totally willing to help you feel those feelings in a safe way so that you don't get, totally flooded by them.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy because it's like since I've gone back to work, I haven't been able to make time for myself at all. Like I've noticed that. It's like immediately, like a week and a half in, I was already like, oh my God, fuck this place.
That's valuable feedback, dude.
Yeah.
That's really
Like,
valuable feedback.
yeah. But it's like I'm leaving on time and I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm all about like, if that's the way you're feeling about your job, it's not sustainable for your body or your emotions to stay in it. So your body's clearly giving you feedback that something isn't working. I mean, your body may be asking you to change jobs. I
Oh
wouldn't
yeah.
be surprised.
The whole other that's a whole other cup of tea we'll talk about next week. But it's just like yeah, it just yeah, the binging has been more immediate.
Yeah. Well, the fact that you can talk about it is in a group of people is huge. And I think it's great to talk about it in a group of people because it really chips away at shame that people will feel about stuff like this.
Yeah.
Because everybody has a fucking coping thing. That's the thing. We all have unhealthy coping things,
Yeah.
and judging ourselves for it and feeling shame for it only makes us need more coping skills to deal with the judgment and the shame. So let's just talk about it openly. There's no reason to be judged about it. You're not doing anything wrong. You may end up harming your body. Like, that's a very real thing. But people who are addicted to video games also harm their body. And people who are addicted to alcohol also harm their body. So it's like there are things that we use as coping mechanisms that are objectively not supportive of the body. And we can find things that are objectively supportive for the body that isn't rooted in a story of guilt or shame or judgment of the self or whatever. It's just, I need something to cope right now, but it can't be food because that's not objectively supportive to my body.
Yeah.
So I need this, I need to sit here and cry. I need to shake. I need to do some breathing or whatever. But like you're gonna have to start feeling whatever's underneath all of those stories of I failed, she's not listening to me, I'm disappointed. You're gonna have to start feeling that. And it's not fun. I promise you it's not, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
Okay. And reach out if you need anything.
I will. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Anyone else? Are we going to call it? Are we calling it? Okay, I guess we're calling it. Thank you for those of you who stayed on to the bitter end, or the sweet end, actually. It wasn't a bitter end. I will hope to see you all on Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. Central for our group call. Please Observe yourselves. Start to play with your window of tolerance a little bit. Play with some intentional stressors and see what happens. And bring that stuff to the call and we can talk about it. Sound good? Awesome. Love you all so much. It was awesome to see you. I'll see you on Tuesday. Good night.